This Friday, April 7th, was the day of the remembrance of the Rwanda genocide. On April 7th, 1994, the majority Hutus began brutally murdering the minority Tutsis. The genocide lasted 3 months until the Tutsi army that had pulled together outside the country gained control. 80% of all Tutsis were killed. 800,000 people in 3 months. The genocide was vicious and it was contagious. People who had never killed, incited by propaganda and their peers, turned to their neighbors and friends with machetes. It was a violent countrywide killing spree, and no one really understands what made it possible. Even many of those who participated in the killings do not understand today why they did it. Over 20 years later, Rwanda is slowly recovering from the atrocity. What they are known for now is forgiveness. It became clear to the post-genocide Rwanda government that they could not jail all the perpetrators of the genocide. So the president said to them, "If you plead guilty and ask forgiveness of the survivors and care for them, you may go free." And they did. Thousands of mostly men pleaded guilty, and they went home to ask for forgiveness. The perpetrators and the survivors went to workshops and participated in activities so they could ask for forgiveness and so that they could offer forgiveness. All over Rwanda, thousands of survivors forgave the people who inflicted the most devastating, hurtful acts that we can do to one another, on each other. Murder, rape, torture, destruction of homes and villages and agricultural fields. How could the Rwandan survivors ever forgive? How was it humanly possible? And how incomprehensible is that in our culture that holds up revenge as worthy of popular entertainment in the criminal justice system and in public policy? Just over 10 years ago, north of Spokane, Washington, Jim Schrock was driving his 5 children in their family pickup truck. Another truck swerved across the center line once and then twice. Schrock tried to steer away, but the truck smashed into his own, killing his 5 children and shattering his body. When they called Carolyn Schrock, who was 8 months pregnant, they said, "There's been an accident. Your husband is gravely injured." They waited until she got to the hospital to tell her that all 5 of her children had died. The Schrocks were Mennonites, a faith that takes living out the teachings of Jesus very seriously. Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew, "For if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins." Later in Matthew, the scripture reads, "Then Peter came to him and said, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to 7 times?' Jesus said to him, 'I do not say to you up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. So within days of the accident, Carolyn Schrock visited the man who drove his truck into her family and told him that she and her husband forgave him. The deaths of the children were headline news across the inland Northwest, and so was Carolyn Schrock's forgiveness. How could anyone, just days after they lost their 5 children, forgive the man responsible for those deaths? About a year later, forgiveness was again in the national headlines. Again, 5 children had died, but the circumstances were radically different, and I imagine all of you remember this. Instead of the tragedy of a traffic accident, it was premeditated and what I can only call evil. A man entered an Amish schoolhouse and shot all of the girls. He killed half, and then he killed himself. Intertwined with the media stories of the pain and horror was the story of Amish forgiveness. Within the day, the Amish visited the family of the man who had killed their children. Later, they attended his funeral and shared the money given to them by all the well-wishers with his wife and young children. Again, how was that possible? I, like most people, have stories of the wounds of human relationships, betrayals, broken promises, unkindness, and unfairness. Some of these situations have been very difficult and very painful, and some of them have been very mean and damaging. But I feel so lucky that I have never experienced a truly horrific situation. No one close to me has ever been murdered. I have never been tortured. I have never lost a child to someone's negligence or evil. Still, some of those situations in my life have been very hard to forgive. Forgiveness has, until recently, been the purview of religion, particularly in Western cultures, where the moral imperative to forgive has been grounded in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. In Judaism, if someone asks genuinely for your forgiveness and tries to fix the harm he or she caused, the faith requires that the harmed individual grant that forgiveness. And once a year on Yom Kippur, Jews ask forgiveness of each other and of God. In Christianity, Jesus reminds his followers to be merciful, to love their enemies, and forgive those who harm them. In the Lord's Prayer, the most significant prayer in Christianity, people ask God to forgive us our transgressions as we forgive those who have transgressed against us. In Islam, followers are instructed to acknowledge the harm they have done and ask for forgiveness either from God or from the person they hurt. In the last 20 years, however, forgiveness has also come under the scrutiny of psychologists who studied the benefits of forgiveness on our emotional and physical selves. It turns out that those who forgive are happier and healthier than those who do not. They give more hope and optimism. I used to believe that forgiveness meant, and I think it is actually a very common understanding of what forgiveness is that telling the other person it didn't matter what they'd done and everything was okay and we'll just go on how we are. Often this seemed pretty impossible to me, or not even reasonable and desirable. This, however, is not how forgiveness is defined, particularly by those who study it. According to the Campaign for Love and Forgiveness, forgiveness is a conscious, willful choice to turn away from the pain, the hurt, the resentment, and the wish for revenge that rises from a betrayal, offense, injustice, or hurt. Forgiveness is the willingness to replace all those negative feelings with compassion and with tolerance. Those who study forgiveness always start or conclude their definitions with a list of what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness does not mean that you do not have every right to be very angry and hurt and resentful. Forgiveness does not make the offense okay. Crimes and actions that damage our physical, emotional, and spiritual beings are never okay. Forgiveness does not mean you must pardon the offender or make excuses for them or condone their bad behavior or reconcile with them. What it does mean is you stop holding on so hard to that anger and to that hostility and to that pain. You simply release it. You make peace with that ugliness of your past. The you that was the victim, that for a time had no control over your life, regains control. You walk into the rest of your life free. Many of those who have forgiven great wrongs talk about the freedom they feel afterwards. Anne Marie Hagen is one of them. At 19 years old, she watched her neighbor hack her father to death. From that moment, anger and vengeance consumed her life. She decided the murderer would spend every day of his life in prison as punishment for taking her father's life. No less could be demanded. 17 years later, when the man was up for parole, Anne-Marie organized a campaign to ensure that he would never be released. It was during this campaign that someone arranged for her to meet her father's murderer. During the meeting, the man, who had been suffering from active schizophrenia at the time of the attack, began to sob. I'm to blame. In that flash, Anne-Marie saw not a murderer, but a human being who had suffered horribly. 16 years and 10 months of misery was just wiped away, she wrote later. I rushed around the table and hugged him, telling him that I forgave him. She continues, I could never have imagined that in doing so, I would set myself free. Finally, I was able to let go of all that pain and all that torment that had held me captive, realizing that I had been my own jailer. The survivors of Rwanda tell the same story. One said, I have started to feel better. I was like a dry stick. Now I feel peaceful in my heart, and I share this peace with my neighbors. Another said, he killed my father and three brothers. He did these killings with other people, but he came alone to me and asked for pardon. He and a group of other offenders who had been in prison helped build me a house and a covered roof. I was afraid of him. Now I have granted him pardon, and things have become normal, and in my mind, I feel clear. When someone does something that hurts us deeply, when we hold anger and hate and relive the injustice continually, imagining revenge, we suffer that injury over and over. The bitterness that can easily seep into the rest of our lives, this bitterness can and does easily seep into the rest of our lives, seep into the rest of our lives. The blessing of the present moment becomes more elusive. We become less trusting. Our relationships are tainted with our anger. Research shows that those who hold righteously to their anger and rage are more anxious, easily stressed, and have higher blood pressure. They are more likely to be depressed and to struggle with substance abuse or other addictions. It is often said that not forgiving is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. This is actually true, in fact. Each time we are angry, adrenaline, cortisol, and I practiced this word like 10 times. Rise in our body. Every time we think about a betrayal or hurtful act that still angers and hurts, perhaps we think about that many times a day. Those chemicals release into our blood. And every time we do it, it releases. Every time. So that we stay in a state of chronic high stress. This state increases the chances of heart disease, digestive problems, headaches, and obesity, and depresses our immune system and our mood. These chemicals also limit creativity and problem solving, keep us continually feeling like out of control victims, and put our brains into a no thinking zone. When you forgive, the chemicals go away and all those effects simply vanish. When the Rwanda survivor said her mind felt clear after she forgave, she was accurately depicting what happened in her body. Forgiveness is such a healthy way to relieve pain and suffering. One researcher believes that we evolved with the capacity to forgive because the act promoted human survival. But forgiveness can be hard. I could not agree more completely with C.S. Lewis, who wrote, everyone says forgiveness is a lovely idea until they have something to forgive. The act of forgiving, of releasing the rage and the possibility of revenge, can feel like letting that person off the hook when they should suffer too, when they should be punished. The situation, it was wrong, it was unfair, they acted badly, there should be justice. It's like the story of the monkey who puts her hand in a trap to grab that shiny object. As long as the monkey holds the object, she is held fast by that trap, since her clenched fence cannot get back out through the hole. If she let go, she could completely escape the trap. But the monkey won't release the object, no matter what. She wants it so badly. Often our anger and our pain can be just like that trap. We relive it, believing that surge of righteous anger, confirmation of others about our very just position, or an act of revenge will even the scales and bring in fairness and resolution. Usually nothing of the sort happens, and we get just stuck re-experiencing that original pain. We allow the person who hurt us originally to keep on hurting us. But how do we let go? How do we actually forgive? How do we release our hand from the trap? Fortunately, forgiveness researchers have studied what makes forgiveness possible, and there are several important elements. To forgive, we must know and understand the hurt and the way it affected our life and our relationships. We cannot simply deny it. Denying is not the same as forgiveness. We must commit to forgiveness. And in this commitment, realize that forgiveness is a process, and we will typically have to recommit to forgiveness over and over. We must acknowledge the inherent worth of the person who harmed us and see the situation from their point of view. We must create meaning from what happened. And we must actually forgive. We must use the words. We must speak them or write them or offer some kind of ritual or gifts. We don't necessarily have to offer that forgiveness directly to the person who hurt us, but we need to feel through a concrete act that we actually did it. We actually forgave. Forgiveness researchers have developed lots of models that incorporate these basic steps and that they expound on in self-help books that fill the shelves at the bookstore. Different models put these different steps in different orders. In some of the steps that I described, they break out into many, many steps, like committing to forgiveness can be many steps. However, most agree that the process of forgiveness, how it works, is individual and depends on the harm committed, the relationship between the offender and the offended, the temperament of the people involved, whether the offender regrets their actions and asks for forgiveness, and on the basic values of the person who was hurt. The process can be over quickly, or sometimes people move through the stages again and again, just like with grief, like a spiral getting to the point, finally, of that final release and real forgiveness. Which brings us back to the Schrock family and the Amish community. They were from religious traditions committed to following the teachings of Jesus on forgiveness and the idea that God does not forgive sins unless we forgive others. In their religious traditions, the commitment to forgive is very serious. So they forgave immediately. However, we should not think of that forgiveness as complete, as if they could just struck out all that happened with a strike of faith, and away went their anger and their rage. Instead, those words of forgiveness were simply the commitment to forgive, which their faith taught them was important to do first. The Schrocks, 5 years after the accident, shared how they still dealt daily with the pain of the tragedy and that it never went away, and each day was extremely hard. Jeffrey Schrock said, "It's not like just because we love Cliff, who was the driver, and we've forgiven him, but it's totally a dead beast. There's still for potential for feelings to rise up." While the Amish do not give interviews, people close to them talk about how members of families who lost children speak of getting up each morning and having to recommit to the forgiveness. They still struggle. It is still painfully difficult. Interestingly, both the Schrock family and the Amish community immediately reached out to the people on the other side of the tragedy. The Schrock family began a friendship with the man who drove the truck that killed their children. Jeffrey Schrock sees this as very important to continued forgiveness. When you're separated from them for a long period of time, he says, you can get some pretty negative thoughts about someone because you're not with them. The Amish clearly had the same idea as they reached out to the family of the man who murdered their children and began long, sustained relationships with them built from the tragedy. Both the Mennonites and the Amish have long cultural traditions of holding forgiveness as a high value. Immediately reaching out shows their understanding of how important it is to make the person who committed the crime a real human being. Realizing a person's inherent worth and dignity and trying to understand their perspective are essential to forgiveness. In a curriculum on forgiveness for children, children are asked after they describe the bad thing that happened to put on glasses that allow them to see the situation from the offender's eyes. In Rwanda, the first act of forgiveness is a meeting between the perpetrator and the survivor, where each hear each other's pain. The perpetrator often builds a house or does farming for the survivor in order to build some trust. When the survivor's pain is heard and acknowledged, when there is a genuine apology and gifts are given, survivors find they are able to release their pain and to forgive. These pairs help build a new peaceful Rwanda, where revenge is no longer the goal. The miracle of forgiveness is it stops those feelings of anger and rage that can so easily just solidify into hate. It frees us. It frees our communities. It makes personal and world peace possible. People are not perfect. I'm sorry if that's a surprise. We bumble through life the best that we can. We hurt each other. We break promises. We betray each other. We ignore when we should have paid attention. We say thoughtless and mean things. Even worse, people commit evil. People start shooting in public places or drive vehicles into crowded spaces. They release poison gas into civilian communities. They take and they lie and they manipulate. They bully and they degrade. These truths mean each of us has been and will be hurt. Each of us have had and will have ample opportunities to grapple with forgiveness. I find it really condescending when people say that someone should forgive. It has happened to me. A well-meaning friend has leaned across the table and said, "You really should just forgive him." And my reaction was like, "How dare you? You have no idea how hard this has been." Forgiveness is truly an individual act. Sometimes we choose to forgive. We make the commitment and we move through the steps. And we spiral through them many times if necessary. Sometimes we forgive because compassion just washes over us and it allows that forgiveness to happen. Sometimes time goes by and one day we realize our resentment and anger are gone. And sometimes we can't forgive at all. Honestly, I have no idea how people forgive genocide and torture and murder, but they do. And they cite the need to be free of hatred, to move on, to seek peace. They move into the future, letting go of what held them cruelly to the past. Peace is the gift that is given by forgiving. It is one of the few ways to stop the cycle of hate and violence. Forgiveness gives us an open-heartedness that allows us to love more freely and live creatively in this world. For those in Rwanda, forgiveness is an act of both survival and hope. People commit to the process because they know better lives and communities depend on it. That commitment provides a pathway to long-term peace in their country. For the Mennonites and the Amish, the decision to forgive is a religious commitment, and their faith what makes it seems to be an impossible act possible. I think about Unitarian Universalist commitments. We honor the worth and dignity of every person. We work for peace. Commitment to forgiveness is one way to live what we most value. And as we seek truth and meaning, as we explore ways to live our values fully, let us contemplate how to live best in peace and love. Let us consider forgiveness.
We have a few minutes for questions and comments.
Creativity got just a small mention and touched upon the miracle of creativity for me. And I think that sometimes when forgiveness or peace of mind or other things are elusive to me, I work on the miracle of creativity. Mm. And it's in some ways it's my canary in the coal mine and says, you know, I can look back at a month that other people would say was really hard for me. And I'd say, yeah, but look at that song I wrote, or look at that thing that I did, or that creativity, I must have been pretty good. You know, it must have been a good month.
Right.
And I just like to thank, you know, Lorraine and Vin and Laurel and all the people that helped today. The creative things that we do not mask the troubles. They don't.
No,
But they have miraculous powers.
I think that's really true. Thank you. And I thought the song was great. That bridge is very often forgiveness. That's the bridge, actually.
Thank you very much for a very thoughtful and inspiring talk this morning. What occurred to me is that a kind of a companion concept to forgiveness is one of justice. And the traditional view of justice is an eye for an eye, which, of course, leaves both people blind. But something that is more consistent with your concept of forgiveness is a restorative justice. And there are some people in this congregation, I'm thinking of the Sorrells, and in my own instance, that experience a restorative concept of justice that was consistent with forgiveness and brought a balance back to at least ourselves, if not other people involved.
And I think that comes right out of, you know, the Old Testament's eye for an eye, but that was not what Jesus taught. Jesus really taught that you needed to engage with your enemies. You needed to forgive. There was, there's a relationship there. And so I think that's really great.
John touched on what I was going to say, but he mentioned the Sorrells, who were longtime members here. A lot of people don't know it's Barbara Hansen's parents, and one of her sisters was killed by a drunk driver. And if you don't know the story of what that family did, it's pretty remarkable.
Just to touch again on justice, I'm a civil rights attorney, and a lot of what I do is holding institutions and corporations and governments accountable. And so this idea of justice just really came to my mind when you were speaking. I have to have a conversation with a lot of my clients that money and the process that we go through isn't going to fix what happened to them, and it's not going to make them feel better on a lot of levels. What has been taken from them, the discrimination that they've experienced, the harm that has come to them. But the process can sometimes give them a voice. It can sometimes make them feel better holding accountable and preventing this harm from happening to other people. And that conversation, I think, sometimes is hard because they have to go through this process of learning to heal on their own. Whatever that process is for them, I don't tell them that they have to forgive, but it's an interesting process that they have to go through on their own. But I do have that conversation that it's not going to fix them. It's not going to make that harm that they lost go away. But when we do fix a problem in the sense that a corporation fixes their policy or something like that, then it does, I think, help that healing process in some sense.
Because you kind of get a sense of control. I think that's one of the important pieces of what I've read, is that when you're a victim, you have no control. As a survivor, you do. And so it's that process of getting control and actually trusting that you can take care of yourself, but often, and that you have compassion and forgiveness for yourself. I heard one person say, We actually can't forgive the harm until we forgive ourselves for being where that harm happened, which I thought was pretty profound. And so it's so complex on so many levels.
Just kind of touched on what I was going to say is that what's hard for me is forgiving myself for either perceived or actual part in whatever harm happened, either because of a shift of guilt or blame or because I was told I did something wrong. Or, but anyway, just whatever your thoughts are about how to learn to forgive yourself.
I do have thoughts about that. It's not great. So right now, there's a lot of thought about self-compassion. And a lot of some of the people that I've read about forgiveness talk about that importance of self-compassion. It's that ability to be compassionate for yourself, that you are a person who is human, who makes mistakes, that you are worthy just exactly as you are, and that maybe things have happened and you have done things you're not proud of. And you just kind of hold those in love. You probably might hold that for a friend in love or a child in love, that they've done something you're not proud of. And so, you know, you can, these men in Rwanda have found a lot of relief in asking for forgiveness and trying to make amends. But all of it has to be couched in our own care and love for ourselves. If we're operating out of that we're going to earn love from out there, it's incredibly difficult to find that grounding to forgive. Actually, that's what a lot of people are saying right now. That's kind of the newest cutting edge of forgiveness research. There's a book called Self-Compassion that helps people walk through it, actually.
Thank you very much, Tracy.